This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
Broadcasting across the state of Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and around the world on the Civic Media app, this is the Dom Salvia Show. And now, here's your host, Dom Salvia.
Happy 2025. Thank you for tuning in to the Dom Salvia Show. I am off today, so we're providing to you some of our favorite interviews and cuts and conversations over the last 12 months. Thank you so much for hanging out. We look forward to doing this once again with you tomorrow live. In the meantime, we start out with our interview with Jody Habish-Sinikin on how she managed to break through and win Wisconsin's 8th Senate District. What would you like to see done? What do you think is important to produce and to do in order to fulfill your obligations, your promises, and what you think your constituents want?
What we want is progress. We want to move Wisconsin forward, get past all this partisan divisiveness and the take no prisoners approach, and start making the necessary improvements and investments in our local communities, in our education system, K-12 up through the university level, codify Roe v. Wade, and secure women's reproductive health for doctors and for families in Wisconsin. There are so many issues that we need to make progress on that have been held hostage for the last 10 plus years under the gerrymander.
And we'll have to continue to fight for those changes and moving forward. Jody Habish-Sinikin, Wisconsin's 8th Senate District elect. Jody, there's been a lot of reflection here since the election. What's your experience? You've run before and you were not successful, and you keep trying to keep fighting, you keep going, and you pulled it out this time. What lessons that you learned might be applicable to everyone's, you know, reevaluating and looking back at what happened this election cycle?
My experience the first time around, as you are well aware, was under the old maps. There is a 12-point disadvantage to any Democrat running in then Senate District 8. Under the new maps, that was cut in half. So we still had about a 6-7 point disadvantage, but we were able to overcome it, again, by really speaking to folks about the value of legislators in Madison working across the aisle with one another, which has long been Wisconsin's tradition as a purple state. I think that that message of putting down a bit of the partisan camps that we've all separated ourselves in to really try to understand each other, what it is that we need in our communities, in our nation, and try to figure out a path forward. That seems to be what has been missing a bit. And I hope that we can heal and make some progress at the national level too.
Jody Habish-Sinikin, Wisconsin State Senator-elect for the 8th Senate District here in the state of Wisconsin. Some of the criticism on the national level, Jody, has been as a party that perhaps the Democratic Party has not supported, not gone after and tried to woo the working class of this country. Obviously, you pulled this out. What's your assessment of that critique?
In my meetings, I've met with so many unions and folks and concerned about labor and people across this district, which includes many, many working people in Butler, in Lannan, Menominee Falls, Port Washington, you name it. I am talking to those people. And I think that there has been a lot done in recent years with the infrastructure deal and others to create opportunities. The apprenticeship programs are phenomenal. I find them so inspiring in ways that we can help our young people move into good careers and good lives for their families of the future. So I think that some of it is a communication problem, yeah, that they haven't been able to express all the good that has been done and is going to continue. So that is really what I have experienced in our district, that we are doing very important things, and talk comes cheap. It's easy to say things and to make promises, but I think people should really look to see what has actually been done to help families.
Jody, you know, the, and again, congratulations. I love the fact that you've continued to fight, and with these new masks, you were able to pull it out. And a lot of the reaction that I've seen and for success for governance is state and local government. I mean, if you want to make changes on the ground where you're at, you have to get involved on the local level. And we're always going to have to deal with a national issue, let's call it. But when it comes down to the state and local level, it becomes, you know, very hands-on, very personable, very face-to-face. Overcoming the communication, I don't know if there's communication, perhaps, if there's a difference in understanding of what the facts may be. As you mentioned, the Infrastructure Act and some of these efforts that were put forth and actually passed under the Biden administration, some folks didn't think it did anything for them. And some folks, when you talk about, well, you know, these tariffs could increase costs if proposed by the Trump administration, could actually increase costs and increase inflation. Some folks really don't hear that. How do you successfully breach that? Because people get very sensitive if they're not aware of a particular fact or in this environment. And I've had personal conversations with friends that have been really defensive about their position if I bring, you know, other facts and new facts to light. And when we deal on a personal level, on a state and local level, what's the best way, do you think, it is to approach, you know, perhaps a difference in not just opinion, but in what we would perceive as facts with those that may not be aware or don't agree with it?
Yeah, I think it's very much what you're saying is the conversation. First, having a conversation. At all these many, many countless stores, I always would start with what's top of mind for you and try to understand what it is, where the concern lies, whether it is with healthcare, whether it is with taxes, whether it is with inflation, whether it is with community safety concerns, education, and start there. And try to get an understanding of what is really bothering them and try to offer solutions on where there can be progress. For example, in the Senate District 8 communities, there is these ongoing school referenda that have come up year after year after year in certain communities. And that's simply a consequence of there not being sufficient funding, notwithstanding the progress in shared revenues under Act 12. More needs to be done at the local level for more autonomy and more funding so that communities are not forced to have to raise their property taxes on themselves just to guarantee appropriate services and education for their children. That is money out of their pocket. Those increased costs at the local level just means that there's less money to pay for groceries, to pay for other life expenses. So I try to explain what we can do at the state level or at the local level. We sure as heck can't take on national price gouging by these corporations at the local level, but we can do things that keep more money in people's pockets here in Wisconsin, and of course, make those necessary investments in our schools and in our communities so that we can have the best possible lives for our families.
Jody, I always thought, you know, when the politicians say, oh, you know, first they're all about local control and then they're not about local control. Then they are about local control. So I guess it depends on what the circumstances are. But no one wants to raise taxes. No one wants to be no elected official wants to come and say, I'm going to raise your taxes because we need to do X, Y, or Z. I thought in some regards, the politicians that voted for this were wimping out to the degree that now they don't have to make those hard, quote unquote, decisions. They're just going to let, you know, the referendum, and everyone's going to do their own referendum and let them raise taxes on themselves. And so now, you know, the politicians, they're not the bad guys, bad girls. You know what I'm saying? How much of that plays into it? That people just, the politicians, the lawmakers just don't want to have to be the ones to say, we're raising your taxes.
I think it's even more than that, given the gerrymander. We have a $4 billion plus surplus. As in billion, we have opportunity to make necessary investments in those matters like childcare, like our schools, like our universities, etc. But it has been held hostage by this legislature, particularly by the Joint Finance Committee, where my opponent, Dewey Strobel, was a co-chair. There has been this partisan war to hold back the release of funding that we could go forward on. For example, the literacy bill that he touted time and again on the radio and in literature that the legislature approved and the governor signed off on $50 million to go into the schools for literacy coaches, curriculum, et cetera. But the Joint Finance Committee has held on to over $49.5 million of that 50. Same with PFAS remediation, same with the money due the Western Wisconsin hospitals, on and on. We have the money available to help families in Wisconsin and to lower costs and to help them, but it has been held hostage by these partisan wars.
Jody Habesh-Sinikin, Wisconsin State Senator-elect for Wisconsin's 8th Senate District. On the education, the vouchers and school choice and those kinds of issues, it seems to me that we have basically two parallel, and one of them an unfunded school systems. Now, I was a product of private school, at least high school. My parents made that decision to pull me out of a public school and put me in a private school and went to Pocket to go do that. What's your sense on the seemingly massive growth over the last 20 years on school choice and school vouchers and so on? And is there some sort of unwinding or something that we can do to at least mitigate the continued growth? How do you see these two different parallel but different school issues proceeding in the next 6 years?
It's an excellent question. I too have been observing that growth. And what we basically are having now in Wisconsin is two separate school systems that require funding, and that is not sustainable. So what we need to make sure that we're taking care of is holding these school systems to similar standards of accountability and transparency. And particularly when it comes to special education funding, there needs to be comparable standards so that the public school system isn't unfairly burdened with special education needs that is paid at such a disparate rate than the voucher schools, which places enormous burdens and a disadvantage on our public school system. So there just needs to be a really good and careful look at this, because everyone, I think, can agree that we need an excellent education system for our children, for Wisconsin's future, for our economy. And there is so much dysfunction out there and lack of accountability that I'm very much hopeful that we're going to make some progress on this and address the concerns that you just raised.
That was our interview with Senator-elect Jody Habesh-Sinikin and how she managed to break through and win Wisconsin's 8th Senate District. Now stick around. Susan Webb Yackey of UW's Lafayette School of Public Affairs on how to have a civil discourse coming up next.
You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Happy 2025. Welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show. We are reviewing our favorite interviews over the last 12 months. And coming up next, our interview with Susan Webb Yackey of the University of Wisconsin's Lafayette School of Public Affairs on how to have civil discourse. And she had an opinion piece in the Journal Sentinel. Town hall conversations showcase desire to find common ground across Wisconsin. We loved it. Susan, welcome to the show.
I'm so glad to be here. Thanks for having me, Dom.
It is my pleasure. Well, we're all about common ground. We're all about conversations here. Sometimes it gets a little hairy. It can be a little less respectful. But, you know, I endeavor to have great conversations, Susan. Let's talk about this. You had some town halls. Then you had some dinner conversations. What started this and what was your conclusion?
So, you know, this is a long running challenge for our society, right? The fact that we're so polarized these days is evident in everywhere, right? We see it in our communities, we see it in the news, we see it in our homes sometimes. And the LaFollette School of Public Affairs, its mission is evidence-based policymaking. But we quickly recognize we can't get to evidence these days unless we can talk to each other. So one of the reasons we set up this set of programming in advance of the 2024 election is we wanted to get Wisconsinites across the political aisle talking to each other.
Evidence-based. That's a nice thought. Who determines what the evidence is? Isn't that part of the problem? What one side would consider as evidence, the other one would call hearsay?
No, that's certainly part of it. And, you know, I'm a social scientist by training, a political scientist, and my colleagues at the LaFollette School are economists and public policy scholars and public administration and sociology scholars. And all of us collect and think about evidence differently. In fact, every American collects and thinks about evidence differently. And that's okay. You know, if we bring that collection to the table, part of, you know, figuring out the quote unquote truth is to sift and winnow that evidence together and to do so as a community member.
The need for civility. I had a couple of rules. Listen, speak, respect, disagree agreeably, and be present. I love this, and it sounded like it went over very well, and the participants really enjoyed themselves, which, you know, I can see walking into something like this, especially given the political situation we're in now. You could be concerned how hairy is this going to be. But I think number one, Susan, you have to have willing participants, right? Not just in normal conversation, but even to do what you guys did.
Absolutely. You do have to have willing participants. You know, it's a challenge for, you know, thinking through what could be some of the remedies to our political polarization today. Is that the fact that the people that show up oftentimes aren't the ones that you really need to talk to.
Right.
And, you know, so one of the ways we tried to get around that with this set of events, and let me tell you a little bit more about these rich set of events, and you asked earlier kind of what we found. Let me tell you a little bit about that too. So we set up these events by first using a representative sample of Wisconsinites. We actually are part of a survey that went out to 3,000 Wisconsinites, asking them a few questions about their views and attitudes. And at the very end, we asked a question of all these survey participants, if there was a conversation event, you know, that brought you together with people from across the political aisle in your community, would you ever come? And the people that said yes, actually about half of the 3,000 people said, yeah,
wow,
I'd come, right? So actually that's sort of interesting in and of itself, right? And then the next question asked people specifically and said, there's a dinner and conversation event in your community. Here's the address. Here's the date. Would you ever want to come? And a huge percentage of the people that said yes to our first question said yes to the second. And that's the group of people that we brought together. So while it's not a representative sample and slice of Wisconsinites, it's the people that said yes to those questions and could come, right? It is closer to representative selection than a lot of these kind of dinner and conversation events. And that helps us kind of think through what could be the mechanism or the means by which these events could be the most impactful. So we have a kind of a closer set to representative Wisconsinites. So we brought them together in four different events for our dinner and conversation events in Pewaukee, Green Bay, Eau Claire, and Madison. And they were all in advance of the 2024 election on four consecutive Wednesdays. And across those events, we had about 350 Wisconsinites come. Each table was set, we were kind of picture it to be kind of like circular tables. And each table had about 6 to 8 Wisconsinites. They didn't know each other. They were across every table had some kind of partisan difference. We knew that in advance. We actually seated people because we knew that some were strong Democrats and some were strong Republicans and some independents. And each table also had a trained facilitator. And the facilitator was a LaFollette School student, staff member, or faculty member who had been specifically trained to kind of guide this conversation and make sure that the participants lived up to those expectations, those rules of the road that you listed earlier. And to be frank, we didn't know what to expect. And, you know, neither did the participants. Yeah. We had this wonderful woman share at the very end of the 2-hour event where they were served kind of dinner and had conversation. At the very end, we had one woman say, we were kind of recasting and saying, like, what did you think of this event? What did you expect? And she said, hey, look at me. I didn't bring my coat. I didn't bring my purse. I thought this was going to be a bust and I was going to say I had to go to the bathroom and leave. And she said, after 2 hours, I had a wonderful time and I really felt heard and understood and heard some things that kind of challenged some of my beliefs in ways that are healthy. And so that is the kind of feedback that we got from a lot of, not all the participants, but almost all the participants were extremely satisfied with the event.
Were there any surprises to you?
I think I was surprised at the desire for connection. This is connection across people that don't know each other. So I'm thinking about all of these were anonymous. This is anonymous participation, you know. But afterwards, many people shared their contact information with each other and yeah. Made connection, wanted to continue the conversation. A lot of people in their feedback on the event said, like, next time I think you should make the event slightly longer. I think 30 or 45 more minutes will get us, going. Yeah. Be able to do more. And that was the piece I didn't anticipate, was the fact that people really wanted to connect, and they don't want to just connect with people that are like them. They do want to hear with people that are different, at least in terms of their political views. And a lot of people found that part of the event, terrifically stimulating.
So it is possible we can talk and get along, especially when you listen to the Dom Salvia Show. Come back with us. We'll speak with Ann Egan Wachow of Wisconsin Native Vote on how her organization works to engage Native youth and people of all ages in the civic process.
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com.
Welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show. We're revisiting some of our favorite moments over the last year. Here is a revisit with our conversation with Ann Egan Wachow, Wisconsin Native Vote, on how her organization works to engage Native youth and people of all ages in the civic process. Ann, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Dom. It's great to be here.
Oh, I appreciate you coming in. It's the silly season, Ann. It's that time to get people up and fired up and get them out to the polls. Let's talk a little bit about Wisconsin Native Vote Urban Organizers, the organization. What's your mission? What's your goal, Ann?
Okay, well, our mission is to combat voter disenfranchisement through voter education and voter registration with the Native American population in Wisconsin.
Excellent.
And I'm born and raised from the Menominee Reservation, and the daughter of Edith and Hillary Sparky Waka from the Menominee Reservation, and my dad was an environmentalist.
So it's in the family then.
It totally is.
You're picking up a torch and keeping going.
Exactly.
Excellent.
We love it. We also work on policies that impact Native communities' access to polls as well. And we've had some incredible success in 22 and 23, for example. We increased voter turnout on the Red Cliff Reservation by 130%.
Wow.
And on my reservation, I'm happy to say, we went through the legislature first, then we worked with community organizations and members, and we did doors, you name it, and went to powwows, and we increased voter turnout there for the 2023 compared to 2019 spring election by 75%.
Wow, that's amazing.
It's a lot of work, but it's purposeful, and it's from the heart.
Now, is this a nonpartisan organization?
Yes.
The whole point is to get people just engaged and out to vote.
That's exactly it. We just want to get them the tools so they can register. They know where to go. They know how to get absentee ballots, what IDs they bring. And it's real exciting. I've been with Wisconsin Native Vote for 2 years, and people are coming to us. And I've lived and worked in Milwaukee for since I left the reservation, I went to Marquette, worked at the Milwaukee Sentinel for eight years.
I saw that. You are a journalism major.
Yeah.
Huh? All right.
Isn't that wild? That's why we work well together.
That's right.
And then I worked for the teachers union, WEAT,
okay,
for 27 years. And then I'm on the boards of several organizations. I was with the Indian Community School of Milwaukee when they moved from downtown to Franklin. And also now I'm on the board for the Gerald L. Ignace Indian Health Center. So I've always felt like I wanted to give to my people.
Yeah.
Now I get to do it. This has been my dream. It's like I feel like I've been working towards this position I have now since I left my reservation.
And what are the biggest hangups or gaps your experience has been with getting people out to vote? What do you think the most challenging part of that has been?
The biggest challenge has been people don't think their vote matters.
Really? Just
yeah, we've had the vote.
Yeah,
exactly. And we've had the vote for 100 years, but some states didn't get it until 1976 for the Native American people. So our people don't feel like their voice matters, but they're starting to see that it does, especially with Mother Earth, because Mother Earth is quite ill right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I hear a lot of discussions about that. In fact, an elder told me Mother Earth is sick. She's throwing up. And then a teen from Marquette told me, she said, Mother Earth is ill. She's got a fever. And then we were having an event at GLIC, the Gerald L. Ignace Indian Health Center. And a client said, Mother Earth is on menopause. She doesn't know what to do. So we use humor a lot in what we do.
Yeah.
But also there are barriers. For example, to register, you can't have a P.O. box. You have to have an address. Well, I grew up with a P.O. box on the reservation. So there are ways around that. And we're working with the Elections Commission and Native American Rights Fund. So we work to get every single person we can to vote because it really matters, because like a presidential elections have been won in Wisconsin or lost by 1%, which is about 20,000 votes. And it's estimated that there are about 70,000 natives who are eligible to vote.
Ann Egan Walkoff from, she's the urban organizer with Wisconsin Native Vote. You know, I grew up out in the country. Route 1, Box 31 was our address. Of course, we didn't live in the box, but that was the thing. How do you practically overcome something like that? What's the answer for folks?
Well, there are a variety of ways. For example, I'll give you an example of Milwaukee. Okay, Milwaukee, we've got a homeless population.
Sure.
Okay, natives. So if they are patients at the Gerald L. Ignace Indian Health Center, what we can do is send them a letter on our letterhead addressed to them at the health center, and that can be considered their residence, and that's considered their place of registration.
Okay.
And we're just still working with the Elections Commission because there's sometimes we just don't know. We're trying to combat that box, P.O. box.
Yeah.
We had that on the reservation.
Yeah.
And tribal IDs work now. And they didn't used to. And I can tell you a story about why I love what I do.
Please.
Passionate. I moved to a suburb of Milwaukee and I went to register. And the woman was like, okay, name, birth date. Okay, current address. Where were you born? I said, Menominee Reservation. And she said, you're Indian? I go, yes, I am. And she was just, Indians don't vote. You can't vote.
What?
Yeah.
What?
20 years ago.
Wow.
I know. And I said, ma'am, I can vote. I voted before. I remember this like it was yesterday. You've voted before? I go, yes, ma'am, I have. I said, I'm from Wisconsin, Menominee Reservation, which is also a county. Yeah, I'm a citizen of Wisconsin and I'm the United States. She said, you can't vote. Indians can't vote. So she went up to the head of the poll there and I saw her get a little discussion with the person. And she came back and she said, ma'am, I wasn't being racist. I was following policy.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know where to go on that one. 20 years ago. And then this is a poll worker, a trained poll worker
right.
in suburban Milwaukee, not that long ago.
And she was an elder. So I'm going to give her this, is that she might have remembered when we didn't have the votes at that time.
Yeah.
So I'll say that. But people would have walked away. So when I'm talking to a group of Native Americans, and I sense that they're just kind of not really interested, I tell them that story and they're like, what? And that gets their dander up. And I'm going to go vote for sure.
Absolutely. Just because of that.
Exactly. Exactly.
And what's your experience been like with the Wisconsin Elections Commission trying to get answers and trying to, you know, help facilitate the folks getting ready and registered to vote?
They are so welcoming and they really want to work with us. Angelique Bajin is my colleague and the director of our civics engagement. So she's working with them constantly, trying to figure out ways around these barriers. And also we have the Native American Rights Fund working with us as well. So like on the election day, we'll have people out at polls ready to see if there's any problems, and we can call them or they'll be there and they'll start. We'll figure out ways to get people to vote, because we had an incident in the spring of 2023 where a tribal member was told she wasn't registered, and she was. And they kept saying, no, you're not. She goes, I'm registered. And they argued with her, and she said, I am registered. We ended up, NARF came in, ended up, long story short, that clerk had to apologize in a letter in the newspaper for that incident.
Really?
Yes. And people sometimes are afraid to go to the polls given the location. So, for example, if it's near a police agency, sheriff's agency, someone who may have been arrested may think I can't vote anymore, but they can.
Yeah.
So what we do is we educate, and the best way is one-on-one. So I told you, I go to a lot of events. We go to powwows constantly. We recently had a baseball game on August 15th, and a donor, an anonymous donor, gave us 1,000 tickets. And nice. I was just going to ask for a couple hundred, and she gave me 1,000. Like, I was starting to cry.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So what happened was we got Indians from across the state, Native Americans from all 11 tribes coming in, kids who never had a chance to go to a game. They came in and they got to go to the game. We had a tailgate, we had speakers, and we had color guards of veterans who represented each tribe in the state come in, and they carried their tribal flags. And then we had a traditional drum, Smoky Town, which is known throughout the country. And so they were at the tailgate as well. But then, this is the best part, they got on the field. And the native song was played, the flag song, and then the color guard came out. And I still have people telling me that the pride that was felt in that audience, and it wasn't just natives, it was everybody, the pride in their country. And one of the flag carriers from Oneida, Terry Matoxin, said, you know, it was an amazing feeling and humbling, and even seeing the Brewers stand at attention was just wonderful. So then the fun part was I got to throw out the first pitch that day.
All right. Did you get across the plate?
Did you get it over?
I got it over. Yeah. I did. But here's a secret. Don't tell anybody. I only went halfway and no one noticed that.
That doesn't matter. You got it over the plate.
Yeah. And then this little kid came up to me. Did you throw out that pitch? I said, yeah. He goes, good job. And he high-fived me. And people were saying, good job. And then when I left, I high-fived all the Brewers.
Yeah.
And I wasn't supposed to, but I still did. But it was fun.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Ann Egan, Waukaw, Wisconsin Native Vote Urban Organizer, joining me in studio. You said the best way to get people up to speed with how it all works is one-on-one. That's very time-consuming, right?
It is, and that's what we do. So you see, now you've got people coming in, oh, you want to work on getting our people to the polls. People are coming in now. We do this 24/7, 365 days a year. And people are now asking me to come in where I've been pushing to get in. For example, the Indian Council of the Elderly in Milwaukee asked me to come in and do a training and voter registration, absentee ballot requests, the whole gamut. And I'm going to be doing that on Friday of next week. And then the book club at the Her Wellness Center, which is a behavioral health center. They treat our Native people with traditional medicines. And okay. I'm going to a book club that day. And also I'm going to be able to walk people to early voting from Glick, which is next door. So, you know, one-on-one is the key. It's time-consuming. Yeah, it's draining, but I get energy from people. So for me, it works out well.
Very rewarding.
It really is. It is. And we've done so many different things across the state. We're going to be doing some 3-on-3 basketball tournaments and getting some murals painted on some school gyms. And we had a big mural painted and commissioned for the Gerald L. Ignace Indian Health Center. It's huge. And that was commissioned by a Christopher Sweet and a Ho-Chunk native. And he is known throughout the country, and it's up, and we got a lot of publicity and we got a lot of people there.
That's great.
It was wonderful. Yeah. And the powwows, come to Hunting Moon Powwow. It's October 18th, 19th, 20th. Come join me for a bit and sit with us. We have a blast talking to people. And I see the change. People are more interested now. When I was at an event over the summer, and someone came up right away, a Native American woman said, okay, register me. You know, isn't that a great change?
Yeah, exactly.
And we have organizers throughout the state. Now we have someone in the Bad River area and in the Menominee area.
I was going to say, how many people do you have in this effort organized to try to get people out to vote?
There are four of us.
Okay.
And some are part-time, but everyone works. Like I said, it's purposeful. Mm-hmm. And when you see my colleagues, it's so wonderful because we don't get to see each other much because we're so busy. But when we get together, we just have a blast.
Yeah. Yeah.
We call it the vote squad, the native vote squad.
And are there, besides like the P.O. box issue, any other like very, you know, specific Native American challenges in getting registered to vote and engaging in the process?
Well, transportation could be a problem as well.
Yeah.
Because we're not like out west where it's so far, but that's a big issue. But again, making sure they're registered and making sure they accept our form of ID, because at one point tribal IDs weren't taken.
Yeah.
And they are now. And when I went to vote last spring in my polling area, and I showed her my tribal ID and I went through and it was not a problem. And I told her my story about my first experience. She said, well, we've grown a lot since then. Yeah. And then she said, an 18-year-old kid from the Nicolay High School where the polling area was said, I just turned 18. I want to vote. How much does it cost?
We have a lot of work to do.
We're working with high school kids as well. I recently worked with some MPS students and got them registered, and they're just exciting. We're also looking for poll workers for like Milwaukee, especially because they have about 2,000 poll workers that they need. So I'm going to volunteer. So if anyone, I talked to Tom Fleischem Jr. from Waco Company. He's the CEO, and I didn't know that at the time. And he said, you know, if anyone questions the validity and of our polls and our voters and the ballot, they should go work as a poll worker because then they'll see how strong and solid our process is.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to be volunteering in Milwaukee for sure.
Thank you for listening. Come back with us a bit more from Ann Egan Wachau, Wisconsin Native Vote, and Susan Webiaki of UW's Lafayette School of Public Affairs.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Find yourself a girl and settle down. Live a simple life in a quiet town. Steady as she goes. Steady as she goes.
Welcome back to the Dom and Selvia Show. Happy New Year to us all. Revisiting some of our favorite clips over the last 12 months. We're going to have a bit more from Ann Egan Wachau and Susan Webiaki of UW Lafayette School of Public Affairs. How do we keep this thing going? Or as Jess said, how do we make this real?
I think I'll provide two pieces of advice, and I'm going to call them sort of state of minds. When you come in to these questions, like these conversations, what kind of state of mind do you have? You know, so you could think of yourself as being like tensed up and like ready to fight. Like that would be a state of mind. Right? Mm-hmm. And I'm going to suggest that doesn't work very well.
No. All right. I'm going to mark that one down. Damn it.
All right.
Okay. All right.
Cross that one off.
All right.
What's next? So let's get on the other end of the spectrum and kind of two different ideas. And one is curiosity. So curiosity happens to be this emotion that all of us have, and it's just a really wonderful emotion to bring to these kind of conversations. You know, someone tells you their long-held belief, their kind of why for how things ought to work, and maybe it's something you don't agree with. One state of mind is to be curious about it and to say, like, how did you come to that point of view? And, you know, when did you start feeling this way? And what happened in your background, or what information do you base your ideas on? So just to be really curious about it. And that tends to put people tend to have a very different demeanor when you're asking them about themselves and you're showing curiosity. And the other kind of state of mind that I would suggest that can be really helpful is humility. You know, so
Man,
I know, I know. That's a tough one for a lot of people, including me. Hey, I'm a professor, right? And you know, and the kind of humility that people, that scholars identify as being the most important, is actually intellectual humility. This idea that we don't have all the answers to all, we don't, none of it. In fact, you know, the highest level philosophers of society tell us the more that we know, the more we understand we don't know. Right. So really bringing that attitude towards some of these conversations can be an effective way to kind of, to break down some of those barriers. And we find that people that have high levels, for instance, of intellectual humility tend to do better in, you know, talking across political difference than those who come in with low levels of intellectual humility.
Are those the state of mind? Is something can be trained, can be learned? Because I think a lot of people, when you hear a topic or a person, it can just, they get triggered. Like immediately they get to a stance, a certain state of mind, Susan, that it's hard to overcome, right? How is that something that's trainable, or you just have to continue to be observant of it?
I think it's both, right? I mean, so I think a lot about these conversations across difference as being like a bicep muscle. Right. You know, if you don't work it, if you don't work at it, it atrophies and, you know, it's flab before you know it.
A bit more from Ann Egan Wachau. Your background in journalism, though, how did you end up in this role coming from a journalism degree at Marquette?
Well, first off, when I was going to go to Marquette, I was told by my teacher, Indians don't go to Marquette and graduate.
Yeah, people have all sorts of ideas about what Indians shouldn't be doing,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. So I said, well, I'm going to go. So I went. Well, I graduated too. And then when I was in the journalism class, the first one with like 200 kids, out of you, only 15% will graduate and only 1% of you will get a job at a newspaper. I thought, okay, well, what am I doing here with all these rich kids? Right. You know, I got two pairs of jeans and three sweaters. What am I going to do? Well, I kept through and I persevered, I guess. That's what my son said, Mom, you just took opportunities and persevered. Yeah. And then I got, you know, I worked as a copy kid at the Milwaukee Sentinel. And then they hired me out of the goodwill of their heart because I was so green. But in retrospect, everybody was green. And someone even said, you got hired because you were red. I said, you know what? I'm hired. That's okay.
A DEI employee, huh?
Exactly. Uh-huh, exactly. Uh-huh. But it was the most wonderful experience because if you can do the newsroom, you can do anything.
Yeah.
And I went in there with the idea of getting some kind of a skill so I could work with my people. Like I said, my father was an environmentalist. He fought to have the Wolf River dedicated as a pristine river so it's protected. He fought a nuclear waste dump site on the Menominee Reservation. He fought Exxon mine. So 2 weeks before he passed away, he led a march. So he passed that on to me.
Wow.
And he taught me never let being an Indian be a reason to get something or not to do something. So that's how I've lived my life. I've had a real good role model in my father.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
And a lot of support from my tribal people. You know, it's wonderful to go home. Annie, you're home.
Yeah,
Mom.
The community, you know. Yeah, I mean, that's a lot of what it's all about. And is the engagement, is that the cure?
The discussions I've had with people, they know that their vote matters and that Mother Earth really needs the vote. She's very ill and we have to protect her. And we've done a lot of projects with Wisconsin Native Vote. For example, we had a lobby day and we brought some kids from the Menominee Reservation down from, there were the seventh, eighth graders from a tribal school.
Yeah.
And they came down to lobby for $400,000 in the governor's budget.
Like down to the Capitol?
And yes, down to the Capitol. Yeah, they were in the Capitol. They were like, wow.
Yeah,
I remember my first
experience.
Time.
Yeah. Great.
And they had a great time and they lobbied and they even talked to the Representative Mirsa, who was their rep there. And it was a wonderful experience. I was really proud of those kids. And they had their traditional regalia on. Some had skirts, urban shirts, and they had signs, Save Our Water. Then they decided to stand along the sidewalk and hold their signs up and cars were beeping. And they just had a great time. Yeah. And what an experience for those kids.
Absolutely.
We have to start. And we say vote for the seventh generation. We have to work for the seventh generation. That means work for the generation now so that they can take it and work for their next seven generations.
These women sure have a lot of wisdom. Come back with us for a curated best of with Harvey K., our favorite Delano Democrat.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.